I'm your inner dream monologue, and you're fast asleep, so I'll be quick. Great job using the Colgate Optic White Overnight Teeth Whitening Pen before bed. When used as directed, it gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 7 days. So while I fly and talk to animals, you're removing teeth stains with ease. Sweet dreams. And when you wake up, keep on living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Hey everybody, this is a quick reminder that if you go to Watching the Throne on iTunes and rate us anywhere from 1 to 5 stars, and then you take a screenshot of that review and get it to us either through Twitter, we are at Kanye Podcast, or you email it to me at travis@watchingthethrone.com, you will get entered to win My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy on vinyl, or I guess any format you want it on, maybe CD, maybe it's on cassette somewhere, I don't know. But if you do that, you will get entered into a contest with everyone else, and we will pick a winner in the next month or two. So good luck.
Everybody want to know what I would do if I didn't win. I guess we'll never know.
So keep it locked. I don't get enough of it.
Jesus just rose again.
Listen to the kids.
Welcome to Watching the Throne,
a lyrical analysis of Kanye West.
My name is Chris Soul.
And I'm Sample Bean, and today we are talking about Kanye in a little bit of a different way than we usually do, which I'm pretty excited about.
Yeah, normally it's just us two being jabronis on here for way too long of time, way more than necessary. But today we have a ringer coming in. We got Martin Connor, who runs Rap Analysis, site and YouTube channel, right? Martin, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like you were saying, Chris, I am Martin the Ringer Connor, as I'm well known as. But yeah, so you got it exactly, nailed it on the head. I have a website, rapanalysis.com, where I, too, talk for too long and too much about Kanye West and Patrick Swayze movies and stuff like that. Yeah, can't have enough, right? So that's exactly what I do, though. So I take a musical approach to rappers, right? You know, because people do, I think of tons of people, especially the Watch the Throne podcast, they do a great job of talking about Kanye from a storytelling point of view, you know, or a poetic point of view. And obviously, you know, his people do a great job of looking at him through the context of race relations in America, sociological looks at him and stuff like that. So what I try to bring to the table is to consider him as a musician, a pure musician, you know, almost as if he was Jimi Hendrix with his guitar, Mozart with his, I don't know, piano or whatever, and stuff like that. So, yeah, what we get then is you see a highly, highly developed musician, especially on the songs we're going to talk about today, and his soul sampling technique especially.
For you, music is a big thing for you then, as a musician kind of perspective, because I know the reason we come to Kanye from a lyrical perspective comes from the fact that both Travis and I work a lot with words, storytelling, narrative. So that's kind of the lens that we view Kanye in, and the kind of focus. You yourself come from a musical background then.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So, you know, took piano lessons when I was in third grade. Hated it. Absolutely hated it. Begged my mom to let me quit. I did. And then, you know, kind of picked it back up in high school, you know, writing shitty emo songs a la Weezer and stuff like that. And then eventually I came to my senses and started loving rap in college, where I graduated from Duke with a music degree. Where I studied rap, you know, that's kind of where my love of it came up, and I started notating it. You know those little dots and lines you see on sheet music and scores? I started representing rap in this way, and one of the first ones I did was Game, and then eventually I came to do a full, an analysis of Kanye's songs on My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy that looked at them, yeah, like you're saying, like musical structures, right? So what I was struck by was how long every song on that album is. And, you know, the average length is 5 minutes and 58 seconds. And that is just like no other rap song out there, you know? So eventually I wanted to, I mean, what, 2 minutes longer, 2.5 minutes longer? And so I wanted to explain why. And so what I love about My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasies is these extended, what I call extended pop form, you know, because yeah, you have choruses and verses and bridges, but you have tons of them. And shit like that is what results in Runaway, yeah, being over 9 minutes long, but no one ever gets bored because it's awesome. You know, you have the great 64-bar vocoder outro, solo, and stuff like that. So then eventually, you know, I took an eye to his soul sampling techniques, and I've been really struck by how it's changed between College Dropout and, 2004, I guess, and then 2016 with The Life of Pablo, and especially how that has correlated or gone along with his shifting views on race, you might say. And that's really what I'd love to talk about today.
Well, that gets into a lot of what Travis and I have noticed from the lyrical perspective, Kanye's growth as a storyteller, just in the way he uses narrative techniques and how that's developed from College Dropout through Life of Pablo. I mean, we geek out on it all the time.
Yeah, well, then I have come to the right place, I think, because I'm about to talk your ear off for an hour. Y'all, you guys can cut my mic when you're ready. Just, yeah, give me the thumbs up or something when you're ready.
No, I think this is our repayment for torturing our listeners for about 2 years now.
Yeah.
Talking incessantly. Talk as much as you want.
Okay, great. Well, yeah, I don't know, man. You guys have stumbled upon something great. I mean, you guys had the South by Southwest endorsement, right? You were on the stage, right?
Yeah, we were the one of the 2017 South by Southwest podcast stage presented by TuneIn podcast shows.
No big deal. Do you drop that line for girls at when you go out on weekends?
Oh, you know, Travis and I are both off the markets.
Oh, okay. Well, that I assume that's how you got your girlfriends then. Good move, guys. Good move.
That was it.
What Chris says when he shakes Kanye's hand for the first time.
Oh, God. I can't imagine. I can't. I have a deal with my girlfriend. Well, she's not aware of it yet. But if we get married and have children, I am naming my child Kanye. You know, I just think Kanye Connor really flows off the tongue. It's too easy.
I'm going to go with Jesus myself.
Oh, that is a good one. Maybe, you know, if you're Catholic, maybe like a confirmation name. I mean, he named his kid St. West. So he's begging for us to do it, really, I think.
Yeah, I think Kanye Connor's a fucking great name.
Right?
Right?
Is it? I mean, Kanye Connor. He's even got a line, something about Con, man. Oh, God, it's from one of the Freshman Adjustment mixtapes. And I used to drop that line all the time, just change the K-A-N spelling to C-O-N. God, I got to look that up and send it to you guys, though. I can't remember what it is.
Please do.
Yeah.
So what would jumping all the way back in time to College Dropouts, and we get this early stage of Kanye and his production, what stands out to you in that realm of how he's using his soul samples?
Yeah, so what stands out to me is just, I've always thought of College Dropout as a crystallization. No, that's not a word. A crystallization of sampling techniques up until then in 2004, you know? Like, on it, don't get me wrong, College Dropout is one of the greatest rap albums of all time to me. It's just that he is doing what people have done before. He's just doing it better than anyone else ever did. You know, so that's what I look at when I hear a soul sampling techniques. I'm seeing the use of groups similar to what people have done in the past. I'm seeing a manner of incorporation of those samples that is similar to what people have done in the past. It's just that he tells a story and weaves it through an album of over 20 songs, which, you know, people are getting away with 9 and 10 track tapes today. That just is amazing and jumps off the page at me, you know? So I think a really great example that I like to use as kind of his first sampling technique that he eventually will go on to develop is Spaceship, you know, because that is just a really classic use of the sampling technique. It's just that his ear for finding the technique was better than anyone, or the good sample, his ear for finding the good sample was better than what most people had done up until then. You know, I really think maybe only J. Cole, in terms of soul samples, RZA Don't Kill Me, might be able to challenge Kanye for that title of the best ear for a soul sample. So on Spaceship, though, what he samples is a 1973 song from Marvin Gaye called Distant Lover. And what he really does is just he takes the Marvin Gaye sample as a whole, cuts the part he wants, drops it into his song, and repeats it over and over. And then he's kind of just like, yep, that's it. That's what I need. It's perfect. add in some drums, add in the rap. I don't want to undersell those parts. But as far as sampling goes, that's really what it comes down to. So I'm not telling you it's copying and pasting, but it's just a more straightforward way of incorporating the soul sample into it. You know, what I'm talking about here isn't the soul sample itself necessarily. It's the musical context of the soul sample as defined by its how it's mixed, you know, how they put it in your stereo world, whether it's to the left or right in your earbuds. The key, the musical key it's in, and then also how often the soul sample shows up, especially where in it, you know, like is the soul sample in the chorus or is it in the verse? And as I was saying before on Spaceship, it's interesting because that Marvin Gaye sample is really just used over and over. It's almost the entire musical background besides the drums.
Mm. And does that stand out from the rest of the tracks on College Dropouts?
That's actually kind of his go-to technique throughout the whole album, you know. So another one I love to point out is Through the Wire, and everything I just, you know, the Chaka Khan sample rather that he pitches up, but beyond that he really just borrows the whole line in whole without changing it too much, but then he makes the rest of the arrangement harmonize with it, you might think of it, you know. He makes his insertion of that soul sample by Chaka Khan really smooth and really nice and tidy, so that you don't even realize, unless you were to look it up, that there is another song by Chaka Khan called Through the Fire, I guess, is that song's chorus. But as you go through the albums, you know, down to past Late Registration to Graduation, and then even on to Life of Pablo and Yeezus, you see this sampling technique really start to shift and change. And what Kanye likes to do more of is to just kind of leave the soul sample almost purposefully out of place in the song. You know, he doesn't make it fit smoothly and he doesn't use it a whole bunch of times.
So moving from a very overlapping is not quite the right word, but a very integrated use of the soul sample.
Yeah.
To something that is a little bit more clanging and dissonant and harsh.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he's just, by the end of it, in his more recent work, he's just really not interested in making the soul sample be this kind of nice sounding, pleasing, consonant part of the arrangement. It's more, he's like, oh yeah, here's the soul sample, and now this is what the rest of the song is, you know? I mean, I'm really struck with it on Blood on the Leaves, right? Because the song starts out with a Nina Simone soul sample talking about a black man who was lynched in the South. And then by the second verse, I think it is, Kanye is, what, telling Jay-Z's girlfriends not to call him up anymore? And you're kind of just like, well, how the hell did we get from one to the next, you know? And you guys have really dug into it in terms of his story, right? But what I see in terms of the music itself is just Kanye is now unwilling to, to smoothly integrate these soul samples into it. It's like his soul samples, they're not even samples anymore, right? Almost. So like, take Facts with the Father's Children, Dirt and Grime sample on Facts, from Life of Pablo. I mean, is that a sample? Because really, he is just taking a part of the song and then putting it at the start of that track and the end of that track, but he hasn't even added a damn thing to it. You know, he hasn't added drums. There's no guitar. There's no other voice or anything like that. So it's like how I think of it is that these soul samples now speak for themselves. He allows that original the original context of the soul sample to come through and tell its own story, whatever it might be, whether it's the Nina Simone a story of the lynching from Strange Fruit, or the Father's Children, you know, Dirt and Grime. I won't subject you to my singing right now. But yeah, that's really what I'm seeing. So I think it's interesting that it kind of tacks so closely with his storytelling development, as well as his public pronouncements on race relations in America.
Yeah, I'm completely on board with what you're saying, and probably why, like, I've never been very technical when it came to the production and, like, looking at the, you know, samples being used. And I think it's really interesting. What you're saying is, like, the samples became part of the storytelling suddenly.
Yes.
It went from just, like, make radio-friendly song to, like, it doesn't necessarily need that systemic change that, like, okay, it, like, nicely leads into this. Like when we have, I think it's New Slaves, and it closes out mm-hmm. with this, like, Hungarian
yeah.
poem. Like, it's kind of, it's meant to be there in a way. It, like, it's not meant to be this radio friendly, like, oh, like, this flows very nicely to this. It's really challenging you to look at the samples as part of the story being told.
Yeah, exactly. And the example I honestly can't get away from is, I think, what's the one where he suddenly switches samples? He's like, how much do I not give a fuck? Let me show you right now. it's either on site or... Is that it? Yeah. Yeah, you know, he's even telling you. He's literally telling you, like, yeah, man, I don't give a fuck that this song does not go with this song. I'm going to put it together. You're going to buy it. And we'll both go home happy, you know. So I love that part, because I think it is one time when Kanye is really spelling out his greatness for you, right? And God damn me if it doesn't work, man. That sample, it's so weird, but that sudden shift is one of my favorite parts. And I think some of the songs on Yeezus, as well as Graduation, like I Wonder, with the, I hope I'm saying this right, Labi Sifra sample, I love them because they represent kind of midway points between Facts and Spaceship, to sum the argument up. You know, on Spaceship, the sampling is really integrated. It's reconciled. It's smooth. It sounds amazing. Your ear is like basking in butter or something. But mm-hmm. by the end of it, he is almost throwing the samples in your face. You know, it's more confrontational, I guess. So, yeah, so like On Sight represents that. And so does Bound 2. Right, because he has those soul samples during the verse, and then all of a sudden during the chorus, you move to this ultra clean, ultra huge original vocal performance by a singer whose name escapes me right now. So that's really what I'm seeing. And yeah, I just think it's super interesting to watch his sampling technique develop in such a straightforward way for like that, and for him to even almost at times tell you, like, yes, this is where I'm at with sampling now. You know, the samples tell the story. Right. So I think Facts is a great example because, yeah, the Father's Children song opens it and it ends it. And then what happens in between doesn't on its surface seem to have much to do with it. But then when you realize that that's the first thing and that's the last thing you hear, then you start to realize, like, oh, maybe Kanye sees it all within the context of you'll never know it. The pain of a brother, you dirty mother. Ha ha ha. Look how far we are, you know. And even on the Nina Simone track, maybe that's his point about if you're going to see it in context, maybe that's his point about Jay-Z's, I don't know, dating history, that it all takes place within the context of a country that has this tortured history of racial relations.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that we talk about a lot. Yeah, Travis.
No, yeah, I was going to go along the same lines and make a broader point about how much I love Kanye because that's my favorite subject.
Yeah.
Because, like, I just think it's amazing that even going down to something as simple as what you're discussing, going from that, like, kind of streamlined sampling of songs to this chaoticness that can happen on site, that to me was what makes it so awesome to be a Kanye fan. Because I think a lot of people, and I know Jay-Z isn't a producer, but it kind of makes me think mm-hmm. of somebody who just raps over a beat, and that's kind of all you can really ever get from them. And with Kanye, we really see him challenging self and evolving as an artist, kind of like maybe like Alfred Hitchcock and Stanley Kubrick did or something, or like Paul Thomas Anderson. Like you get like the basics out of the way early. They're still masterful basics, but you can expect suddenly greatness from this person. You know that the next album is going to be completely different than the last, and it really challenges you. It challenges you to really invest yourself in the complete soundscape of what he's doing.
Yeah, yeah, dog. Yeah, and exactly. Like, that's why, yo, I mean, what? Backseat Confessional Time. It's why I never had any intention of hearing 444 by Jay-Z. And to this day, you know, I still have not heard it. And I probably won't hear it over the next month. It's because it's exactly what you're saying.
You're good.
You know? Like, I'm all right. I'm not getting kicked out. Because, yeah, man. Yeah, Jay did his thing on Never Let Me Down. And, God, that was killer. You know, who else you know been hot this long? But it's
probably
like...
Shit,
yeah, but, like, at the end of the day, man, it's just like, I basically know what Jay-Z is going to do before I hear it. So then I don't need to hear it. You know, it's like, yeah, it's going to be 4-bar loops. There's going to be a verse. There's going to be a chorus, another verse, another chorus. He'll do some ad libs about how much whatever. And then, you know, like, it's done. And he'll do that 10 times. And it's cool how No ID did it or did the whole album. But, like, at the end of the day, you know, I'm looking for more. And that's what you get with Kanye, right? Because with that each new album, yes, you hear the album. But then the really great part is to compare it to his older albums because he just builds on it and he builds on it and he builds on it. And that's what I love, you know, that's what my Vox video about, how much he loves the human voice is really about, right? So you see all of these developments in terms of rapping, singing, auto-tune his beats, and then just when I added sampling to it, you know, yeah, I honestly, I can't wait to hear the next album too. I am super excited for it.
He's recording it up in Wyoming. It turns out it's just all nature sounds and Kanye.
Oh, God. Yeah. You know, I read that tweet. Something, you know, I got a tweet from Complex that was like, Kanye's at the top of a mountain in Wyoming recording his newest album. And it was just like the most Kanye-ist tweet I had ever seen. I think I retweeted it 10 times from every account I could find, man. Because, yeah, dude, if I'm Kanye, that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm going to the top of a fucking mountain, making Wyoming cool, and then releasing the next sound of rap while I'm at it, you know?
Well, and that's interesting to me, saying the next sound of rap, because a lot of the talk gets brought up with Kanye's Chipmunk sampling and then the impact of 808s. But I feel like we're already starting to see the impact Yeezus has had on music. And I'm sure we're going to see the impact Life of Pablo has had on music. From your perspective, somebody that's so immersed into the soundscape of rap, and what impact do you think later Kanye has had on the industry? Or is he having still impact on the industry?
Oh, God. I mean, that's a big question. It's a great one. Don't get me wrong. I guess I would, you know, to a certain point, if I could answer that question, well, then, like, shit, man, I would kind of just try to go become the next Kanye, you know, which I'm currently at work on. But, you know, give me 80 years or whatever. But the so I think the Life of Pablo is really huge because I think that has the potential to have an impact that really goes beyond rap, you know, into. Guys, I don't know. What are the names of those musics people listen to besides rap again? rock, jazz, classical? No. But, you know, because I see the Life of Pablo wasn't really, and, you know, I just released a video about this. Maybe I sent it to y'all. The Life of Pablo was really an album about, to me, how people listen to music, right? I just think it is so of a piece and fits in so smoothly to how people listen to music nowadays, to how people get their music nowadays, that I think it will really make people rethink how they release music, you know? And that's super interesting to me, because it's not like Kanye went to, I don't know, Chance with a business plan and was like, hey, Chance, man, you don't want to sign with a label, dude. You just want to release your music on your own and only sell your merch. But no, you know, he releases a CD, and then what other artists see is it's like, oh, well, he kind of gave us like a starter pack, right? I Love Kanye is a song that lasts 45 seconds with no beat, has only 73 unique words. And so it's essentially like an audio meme. You know, I think back to when Jay-Z released the amazing idea, great idea. And is a perfect example of how Jay-Z is equal parts master businessman and master rapper artist. But he released the Black Album instrumentals, right, first off. So you don't need that grainy, shitty sounding rips that you get online nowadays. And he released his acapella tracks too, right? Official, clean, super smooth mixes, everything. And then what happened, but goddamn Danger Mouse's, Gray Album, right? Where he mixed the Beatles together with the Black Album. I see Kanye's Life of Pablo building off of that. and especially with Ultralight Beam, you know, because what I'm struck by on that song is just how many times you hear a completely isolated instrument by itself, no accompaniment. I mean, that's a sample to a producer. That is a sample crying out to be pulled and put into a new song, you know? So I pulled snares, drums, bass guitars, you know, the choral chords at the end where Kirk Franklin is conducting the giant choir. That is basically like a more developed version of what Jay-Z did when he released the masters or the clean versions. Clean beats and clean acapellas from Black Album, right? He Kanye gave you a sample pack, dog. People buy sample packs. And Kanye was like, well, why the fuck are they buying these shitty producer sample packs? I'll just give them one of my fucking own. And then he gave you I Love Kanye and Ultralight Beam, you know? And so this is what I see. I see the life of Pablo making artists, I don't know, sit wide awake in the middle of the night and be like, yeah, man, if people only watch songs with music videos nowadays, then why the fuck am I releasing albums at all? You know, it's just like people don't listen to albums, man. They listen to playlists. They listen to – there are mashups now. There are bootlegs. So Life of Pablo was structured – Life of Pablo's music was structured in such a way that it fit perfectly into playlists, mixes, mashups, bootlegs. And that's really what I see, you know. And you can even see this having its effect in classical music, especially with some of the recent Pulitzer Prize winners. I mean, that's more rap in general. But, yeah, man, it really is a trip. You know, I saw this study by Spotify that said that rap is the single most listened to music in the world. And so now I'm kind of just waiting for, I don't know, the non-internet to catch up with it, you know, for Kanye to be recognized as this way to be like, yeah, man, it's about more than the music. It really is. And that's what sticks out to me. So longest story short, it's kind of more like I expected to change the way people release music. And you're already starting to see that, you know, especially with Chance and SoundCloud, which was a great story from every side. But
yeah, and everything you've said really speaks to the Twitter strategy and how the album really became a communal thing, going to the point where his concert was a floating stage that floated towards everybody. And it's the whole inclusion theme of that album plays into everything you're saying, which is something I've never thought of. It makes me love what I think might be the best album ever even more.
Which are you saying, Life of Pablo or Yeezus?
Life of Pablo, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, man. I don't know.
Well, those are top two, honestly.
Are they? Yeah, yeah. You know, because, I mean, there are great fucking albums, man. I mean, tons of great rap albums. So one of my personal favorites, and I mention it because I don't think it's on too many people's greatest of all time list, is like Nappy Roots, Watermelon, Chicken, and Grits, you know? Like, it's the one with Oh No, Hell No, Boy. You know, well, like 2000, God, it's always later, 2002, I think. But like, yeah, I listened to that, and during those 90 minutes, it is fucking awesome. But when those 90 minutes are over, I stop thinking about the album. You know, but like Life of Pablo, I come away with this greater feeling of to understand what is happening when Kanye gives you a song, you know. And so I think it gets tied up a little bit, just like in social discourse of like people don't want to grant Kanye this all time great status to put him with, you know, I'm not talking about rappers like Jay-Z. I'm talking about like artists like Pablo, who he references, Pablo Picasso, rather. Mozart, fucking Michelangelo, they don't want to bestow upon him this greatest of all time because he is so unrepentant in his opinion of himself, you know? So when I say, so when you say that, like he understands the Twitter sphere or whatever, I don't want your listeners to think that that is ever, or anyone out there to ever think that that is a knock against Kanye West, man, because it's like, no, he understands how to give you something that is great. And every single sentence or every single word in that sentence matters. You know, something, the music, how to get it in your hands. Where does he release it? Is it Tidal? Is it SoundCloud? Is it a playlist? Is it, you know, which is what Drake called his new album, which I didn't hear at all. He was kind of just trying to hop on the bandwagon, I think. Whatever the one is with the picture of the guy in the front. But yeah, you know, so it's just super interesting. And this next album, I don't even know, man. It could be, he might just take like his, he might, for all I know, he will like re-release College Dropout, give it a new title. Yeah, just give it a new title and be like, yeah, man, that's the new album. And, you know, an idiot like me will be like, well, you just never let me down. That's the same thing. And he'll probably just be like, no, it's not, man. And then like a week later, my mind will be fucking blown and I'll be like, yeah, man, he's right. So I really don't know, man. You know, I just you know, maybe I should go to Wyoming and try to track him down. But yeah, it's just super interesting to watch his whole evolution like that. I just can't get it out of my mind. And on a Friday afternoon, you know what? I'd rather not be talking about anything else, you know? So yeah, it's just crazy.
Well, it's funny you talk about him like re-releasing College Dropout and being like, no, it's not the same thing. There's a famous Jorge Luis Borges story,
yeah,
called like Pierre Menard, the author of Don Quixote, and yeah. It's like this present day writer in the 1940s or whatever writes Don Quixote word for word, and releases it, and it's the same book as the 16th century or 17th century novel by Cervantes, like word for word, but. Mm-hmm. They argue that this guy's version of it has to be deemed as the better version because it came out in 1940. It has the context of all the years between that the original release and this one. And that's kind of the same thing with like College Dropout. Like if you re-released it, it would have all the context of like between a 2017. Now and then. Rather than just a 2004.
Yeah, and that's really what I love because it brings us back to the soul sampling technique discussion, I think. Because what you see happen, you know, 2005, Kanye West has the goddamn cojones to call out the president of the United States on national TV when he says George Bush doesn't care about black people and that's why Katrina happened, right? And then you flash forward and he is still talking about race, but in an even more confrontational way now because people know who he is. So what does he say? You know, they wasn't satisfied unless I picked the cotton myself. I'll fuck your Hampton house. I'll fuck your Hampton spouse, you know? So what you see happening in tandem with this development in this soul sampling technique is that he's doing shit like meeting Donald Trump in the lobby of Trump Tower after he gets elected, you know? And so I just love that you brought up Borges. Is that how you say it? Because I found out about his writings, like 2 days ago. And so I was reading up on him on Wikipedia. So yeah, just all those stories, because another one of his that comes to mind that makes you think about what is happening when you're reading a story is the one where he purports. Okay, so yeah, and again, you know, it's just so hard to explain because there are layers within layers of meaning. Okay, so Borges, I guess, like, came out and he was like, okay, I just discovered this long-lost fragment. And this long-lost fragment was from an actual manuscript, but the fragment that Borges maintained that he had discovered was, it described a empire where they... Yeah, exactly. Do you know this one where, like, their maps match the territory exactly? So at first they were like, oh, well, we made a pretty good map that was 1 inch to every mile, and it was good, and that was pretty accurate. But then our king told us to have an even more accurate one. So then we had like a foot to every mile. And so, you know, it goes up the ladder and eventually they get to a mile to mile. And then, you know, then they just were like, well, now we use just the fucking territory itself as the map. And that is just like, you know, like you're standing in front of one of those mirrors and it just continually reflects back and forth and there's no end to it. So yeah, I honestly, if you guys have any, God, I did not think we would hit this topic.
It's usually how it goes on this podcast.
Okay, great. Yeah. Cause if you do have any Borges suggestions, I'm interested in reading that one, but then also the library, what's it called? Where it has every book that lasts 410 words, the Library of the Infinite, maybe, Library of something, Library of Babel. You know, like that is a library about, so I guess the story is about how there's a library where every single piece of writing ever written that has 410 words is in the library. And yeah, exactly, man. It's just like circles and circles, you know, like those M.C. Escher paintings where the hand is drawing the hand. I really would love it. I don't know. Are there any new, there haven't been any leaks or like releases from the new or a date or anything from the new Kanye album. Has there been?
Nothing that we've heard about. There's just been some rumblings of the Cruel Winter, like with images coming out of like the group. And then the other night, Kanye was seen with Kid Cudi and somebody else. And people are just like, oh, does this mean that like,
they're back?
Winter's coming? Yeah. but nothing in the way of that. And in terms of Borges, seriously, just pick up his collected fiction that has all of his short story collections, because all he ever wrote was short stories. And it's just that's actually what I'm reading through right now. I've read a few of his short story books before, but like this complete collection, and it's is a delight. So
yeah, I'll definitely check it out then, because I don't know, it's weird how the two are connected.
Yeah, well, and you talked earlier about Kanye being recognized as the artist that he is, and I feel like it's a problem with a lot of art. It's kind of cliche to say that most artists aren't recognized in the time period that they exist in, but it's very true for a lot of the great works that we hold up now. And even somebody like Beethoven had a very checkered relationship with the public at the time. Same with Mozart. So I have no doubt, and I think Travis and I have talked about this before, that like 50 years from now, 100 years from now, Kanye West will be held up as like, I don't know, like an icon of the generation that we are lucky enough to be a part of.
Yeah. And I wish I knew enough about fashion to make the call on his artworks there, you know, with his clothing line and the sneakers and all of that. Because, yeah, when you put it together and you're like, oh, well, he's a polymath, right? He creates art in lots of different mediums and lots of contexts, like Pablo Picasso with his drawing, sculpture, painting, all of that. Because I feel like maybe that's your next guest to bring in that discussion of how his fashion might be an outgrowth of his music. You know, I think it is important to realize, because I'm totally on board. I know what you mean with Beethoven's reception. And the person I think of is Richard Richard Schumann, who died, 38, penniless, homeless in a mental institution. So I always figure, like, as long as I'm not quite at that level of life, then I'm doing okay, you know. But to me, I was taught off all of his works, the piano songs especially. I think it's important to recognize, though, that in Kanye's reception, it is slightly more, Kanye will have to overcome more, because I think there is a certain level of racial resistance to an acceptance of him, to put him on the same pedestal as some of these dudes, you know. And so I think it is an institutional resistance, a systemic resistance. But if it were to happen, it would kind of come up more because Kanye, what would you say? I guess like the systems, the economies kind of that give rise to, you know, bestowals of prestige and awards and shit like that, if they were to be transcended, right? So I'm not looking for, so at that moment when Kanye West is accepted as a full genius in all of his glory, I think it's more than likely that it will happen because not because like the Juilliard School or whoever is teaching Kanye West songs and music and stuff like that, but just because they've been replaced with something that is more equitable and more equal. Because I think Kanye does have to overcome that type of racial resistance, whereas obviously, you know, Beethoven was German, Schumann, I guess, was French, Chopin was French. And so, yeah, I don't know. You know, it boils down to something as simple as, hey, that person looks like me. They're cool. And you have to overcome that first. So God, I really fucking hope so. And I will vote Kanye 2020. Should be an interesting smorgasbord to pick from between Trump, The Rock, and Kanye. But God, I'm excited. I'm excited for that primary. So we'll see. We will see.
Could you imagine the debates? It's just like,
oh God, just descending into chaos.
Kanye, you were over your time limit. Don't tell me about limits.
Yeah, exactly. you know, like, oh, Dwayne, I'm gonna let you finish, but I had the best policy platform of all time. You know, he might trot that one out of retirement. But yeah. It's something big, man. It's building up to something big, and just to see it out, to see it unfurl every time is just super interesting. You know, I'm also really interested into how, like, the whole, what would you say? Like how Kim entering his life has affected his music. Because really what I think we're moving towards is, okay, Kanye and Kim get divorced, whenever, and then Kanye just like gives us the best album of all time, man. That album, I think, could be amazing. Kanye on like a heartbreak album, that would be, that would be amazing.
I actually sat back in my chair grabbing my heart at the thought of a divorced Kanye. Like,
yeah. Because if this is Kanye as being part of a fairly stable relationship, you know, and I actually looked up his, you guys ever look up the home videos that Kim shot where he's playing with like West and Nori and stuff?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, just doting father is that image to a T. You know, when North, I guess, is walking around pretending to be a princess with like the sheet on her back. But yeah, man, I just can't imagine. Because, you know, what album came out after his mother passed away? Was that 808s and Heartbreak? I'd have to look it up. But yeah, I mean, whatever one that one, that was a great one. Yeah. It's just, it's super great. And that's why I love talking about Kanye. You know, I don't want to give short shrift to the other great producers out there, Mike Will, Zaytoven. I mean, I'm obviously always going to be talking about Dr. Dre, RZA, whoever. But it's almost easiest, more convenient to talk about Kanye because you see his evolution in such a straightforward way. And then he's always working with the same materials, you know. And I went back and heard the original version of Wolves with Vic Mensa. And I think he just released an album today. But just everyone that Kanye has around him, he just makes the right call every fucking time.
Travis, I don't know if you have any questions that are coming up in your head, but I'm very curious, Martin, to hear what your thoughts are on the difference between Kanye's soul samples on College Dropout and on Late Registration. If there's that much of a difference, not much of a difference, because we usually talk about that narratively, those albums aren't stupendously, like, there's not a dramatic difference between them, but that Kanye refines his individual narrative technique just a little bit to make them stand up technique-wise above what was on College Dropout. So curious just to see if there's something similar going on.
No, yeah, and I would absolutely agree, because to me, Late Registration, as great as it is, and I know Chance ranked it as his favorite Kanye album of all time, but I think that says more about what Chance's preferences in music is, because obviously, you know, Late Registration, that a bunch of those sounds show up on Chance's coloring book, right? Coloring book, the album, I mean. So, I'm totally on board with you here, but to me, and again, it is a great album, but Late Registration is all the songs that weren't good enough to make it on College Dropout, you know? Mm-hmm. And you even see that from the order of songs that he released on in the freshman mixtape Adjustment Series, you know, when he was making beats for Jay on Blueprint in 2003, 2002, all those songs, dude, he's still using material from those three freshman Adjustment mixtapes on fucking Graduation, you know, whatever the song is with Chris Martin. Dude, that verse comes from a freshman Adjustment mixtape that came out 5 or 6 years before. And Kanye even told you, you know, imagine doing three beats a day for three summers. That's a different world, like Cree Summers. So he's got all these leftover beats, man. And what this ends up is that, Late Registration, man, that came out almost less than a year after College Dropout did. I think it was late summer 2005. So he had all these beats stacked up already on hand. And so what you do get is you get a sampling approach that's similar. I forget what the one is. What I was looking at, I think, is Roses. And I think that's a Bill Withers sample. But yeah, again, you get the same thing, right? The sample is a integral part of the arrangement. It shows up, I think, on the verse and the chorus, although I'd have to go back and check. It's a similar sampling technique to what we were talking about before, Through the Wire, Spaceship. The first step towards Life of Pablo and Yeezus happens on Graduation. Because what, you know, broad strokes, really general, but he starts to bring this more of a electronic, a more synthesized look. Bigger synths, buzzsaws, saw waves, all of that. So a great example of that is I Wonder, which I brought up briefly before. You know, so it's really after Late Registration, you guys see the bigger breaks starting to happen after his first two albums. I see a bigger, in terms of his narrative technique, I see a bigger break as well in his sampling technique. Because on I Wonder, well, now you start to get this really soul sample of Labi Siffre married. Called I Wonder, but now you get to see it married with these new sounds. You know, Kanye is still preserving the original sample's key, which is C major. He's still using lots of it, but now those synths are going to show up later on Life of Pablo and Yeezus when he does begin to bring that soul sampling technique. So it might be interesting to think about it if today, Kanye West, we're going to go back and resample that Labby C for a song with the piano, how he would do it today. And I think he would do it far differently. You know, he would do what he did on Facts. He would put it at the start, at the end, and have the middle be in a different key as well. Because that's what happened on Blood on the Leaves. You know, you might be able to feel it. You know, you don't really need to know the theory, but you might be able to feel that shift. When all of a sudden, when Kanye starts rapping more and Nina Simone drops out, there's a shift in keys. It's subtle. And then a bigger one comes on in Facts when you switch from something like B major, I think, to E minor on that one. So, yeah, I see the same kind of break. So for me, I really divide it up into College Dropout and Late Registration go together. Then comes Graduation. And then 808s and Heartbreak. Does that have any like samples, soul samples?
That was going to be my question to you.
Yeah.
Because that's what I'm most interested in.
Yeah. Because honestly, I would have to go back and listen to it. And honestly, you know, that's just one of those things. I appreciate it more for what it was trying to do. No, I appreciate it more as an idea than me actually listening to it. So I don't know if I've ever put on the entire thing front to back, you know. But I loved what he was, what he did, what he went for. You know, it's just not my cup of tea, I guess you might say.
What? Yeah. Oh, I feel like we're now going to have to make like a personal request for you to listen front to back to 808s.
808s and Heartbreak? Okay, hold on. You know, because whosample.com is kind of my go-to. So, you know, I'm generally familiar with it. We're like, what's the track with Yeezy? And then Streetlights and the things where Cuddy actually shows up and just didn't do the songwriting.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of tracks that I know. And what was the fucking sample or the single, the first single?
Love Lockdown. Heartless.
Yeah, exactly. And so I know that one. So let me do a little bit of Google search real quick. But yeah, I mean, because what I was going to say was that, you know, so yeah, after Graduation, I kind of think of 808s and Heartbreak as something out in left field, not in a bad way, just unrelated. And then after that, you kind of start to get this curve back to where we are today. Because what was after that? Yeezus, right? And then you get Life of Pablo. Yeah, and so that's where his soul sampling technique is now. So 808 and Heartbreak. I'm not seeing 808 and Heartbreak sample. But yeah, I mean, that's really kind of, I don't know what you would call it, the outlier, the, I don't know, the bee in my bonnet. Is that the proper use of that? The fly in my porridge? God, yeah, I need a British person. But that's okay. So, okay. So there is a Nina Simone on Bad News. But yeah, honestly, all right. Yeah, boom. Personal request. I will get back to you guys. And shit, we could do this every fucking Friday, guys. We could just. where are y'all? Texas? Yeah, man. Screw the girlfriend. Shit. We should go to the top of a mountain on Wyoming and just do the podcast.
Could you imagine, like, hey, honey, I'm going away for like a month? To Wyoming. It's not really set, but we're just going to go to Wyoming and we're going to record a ton of podcasts and really just crack open Kanye.
Yeah. Yeah. I think she's looking. Yeah. I think she's looking at you sideways over that. Like, oh, is it a bachelor's party? Just no. We're just, going there, man. I've been to Wyoming and I can tell you, man, the only reason Kanye would have gone to, what are your demographics for your audience in Wyoming? I just want to make sure I'm not stepping on any sponsors or anything here.
Just goats, mostly.
Goats? Okay, yeah. Well, okay, good, because what I was going to say next was I've been to Wyoming, man, and there's not a lot there. So I know for a fact that Kanye went to Wyoming in order to...
I think it's infamous for that.
Yeah. How to put this nicely, to get away from it all. And I do mean it all, because in Wyoming, man, they're like, yeah, you have the most beautiful mountains, and you're kind of just like, yeah, but where are all the people? because there's not a light. I loved it there. It is, if you are trying to get away, they do traveling shows sometimes, so right after Austin, Texas, your next stop should be wherever in Wyoming. God, could I name a city in Wyoming? Are the Grand Tetons
Diane
or city, or is that, can you hear me? The Grand Tetons are a national park, right? Not a city? Yeah, okay. And I get Wyoming and Wisconsin mixed up sometimes, but I know it's not Milwaukee. Oh, Jackson. Jackson Hole, right?
Yeah. I know that from Silicon Valley.
Oh, why? The show?
Yeah.
Okay, why? What's it got to do with that?
there's a one episode where these two CEOs are trying to fly. They're sharing like a private jet somewhere, and the guy's like, "Oh, well, I'm going to Jackson Hole," and the other guy's like, "Well, I'm going to San Francisco." He's like, "Well, why don't we just fly to Jackson Hole and they'll take you back?" He's like, "Well, just drop me off in San Francisco and you can continue on to Jackson Hole." And the guy that wants to go to Jackson Hole gets his way, and it sets up a revenge storyline that lasts the entire season.
There we go. getting into the narrative of Silicon Valley now. No, but yeah, that's exactly right. I don't know, man. Up until like 2 years ago, like all those fucking compound name towns, to me, they might as well have been in a new state. Like Lake Tahoe, is Lake Tahoe in California? Because it seems to have no relation to what California is in the culture, you know? I don't know. I guess you can ski there and snowboard there. But to me, Lake Tahoe might as well be in Wyoming, man, right next to fucking Jackson Hole.
You know, I'm looking up our demographic stats. And oh God, no. I can see how many downloads we've gotten for each state.
No shit.
And we've had 108 downloads from Wyoming.
Okay. All right. Now, how about like a bigger state? How many from like California or New York?
California is 25,000.
Okay, man. All right. You know what? I think that ends that discussion. So I think I can. And another thing about Wyoming, you know what I really don't like about it? Yeah, I don't know, man. Wyoming, what kind of goddamn... Like, I know where the name Washington comes from. Named it for our fucking president. Wyoming. And Pennsylvania, Penn's Woods. New York, the new version of the York City. But what's a Wyoming?
I think it stems from the word why. In other words, like, why is this here?
Why would we? Yeah, man,
why,
you know
oh,
what?
Why?
Yeah, you know what? I really, you know, because, yeah, it would be real simple to, I don't know, combine it. I always wanted to combine North and South Dakota. Like, why are they so great that they get two fucking states, man? There should just be Dakota. And I know what you're thinking. Then you're like, well, Martin, then the flag would have an uneven number of stars, but I've got you. Because then we just make Puerto Rico part of Congress, man. 50. Done.
I think
easy.
That's a...
Or you make Dakota Fanning a state.
Oh, or there's that, yeah, or you know what, pull American Ferrara into this too. There are no actors named Pennsylvania. Yeah, because I'm actually in Philly right now, as far as I know. And you know, Texas is fucking great. You guys are basically still your own nation as far as I know. But yeah, so God, you know what else is on our to-do list? All right, soul sampling technique, fix the flag problem. Anything else you guys want me to to just shoehorn here while I'm at it, MacGruber it real quick.
I don't know. Any final questions from you, Travis?
Well, I mean, you don't really know 808s well, so that. But my general question was going to be, maybe to bring in a song that's kind of closer to it is like something like "Everything I Am." Like, I'm really interested in.
Oh right, yeah.
Like how sometimes Kanye with his samples, he really lets them flourish and he kind of strips a lot of sound out, or like it's just drums in there or something. Like it, there's just like, it's very minimalistic and it's empty around this whole samples. And I don't know if there's anything to that, but that to me is like really interesting and reminds me of like minimalistic filmmaking or something. Like it gives it this weird energy and gives it the samples this prominence. And I'm really interested in that and like what the reasons for that are, or if that's difficult to do to fit into a song like that. I don't know if you have thoughts on that.
Yeah, you know, and I think this is kind of where my experience making music comes in handy here, right? Because you're talking about what I had briefly mentioned before, talking about Spaceship, right? Because Spaceship, this is what I was saying before. So when he samples a song, you know, let's say he's in the studio and he goes to sample the Marvin Gaye song. It is... People should know from a producer standpoint, it's not like Kanye goes into the studio and he can decide like, oh, I just want the horns from Marvin Gaye's song, from the Marvin Gaye song, but I don't want the drums or the piano or the voice or anything. You know, you have to take it in total, in whole. Whatever you hear is there unless you have access to what they call the stems, which is every individual track. So on Spaceship, he did just that, right? He sampled the entire arrangement, and it's a full sound from the Marvin Gaye song, you know, like horns, a little bit of percussion, the harmony as well. So, but then, yeah, like what you're talking about, as you move on, he no longer starts to worry about whether or not the music he is sampling is able to be sampled or not. And this is my whole point, right? He doesn't wait for like the beat drop where you hear just the rapper's voice, or he doesn't wait for like the dramatic bridge where you hear only the instruments. He just takes whatever part he wants and then builds his song around that. And so I think Fax is a great version of that, because as far as I know, the Father's Children sample, you hear all of it in kind of its grimy, gritty, glory detail, like you're talking about, like that minimalist approach. You know, he was just like, it's almost like he's more working with blocks now, larger blocks, right? He's not shaping clay. He's connecting Lego blocks together or something like that and building something that looks super fucking awesome. So, yeah, Fax has like, you know, the choir. I think there are some drums in there, and I think an instrument too. So, yeah, so then he does kind of just take it minimalist, drop it in, move on to the next thing. But, I mean, I can't miss it. It's like Kanye is sending me a red flag to be like, look, man, I put these in, you know, because just perception-wise, people remember best what they hear at the start of a song and the end of a song. And that's exactly where he put the sample and nowhere else. And at that point, it's just like, I feel like Kanye might as well have come up to you and been like, yeah, this is my sampling technique now. You know, and you get that from other places, you know. So the Chaka Khan, as far as I know, that sample is just her voice. I might have to look into it a little more. But again, like, he would have had access to an a cappella version or something like that. But now, yeah, he's just more about fitting his music around it. So yeah, that I would say that is a really good call. You know, minimalist is just a kind of dangerous word though, because it has a much different meaning outside of artistic criticism versus what it does inside of it, right? Because people might just be like, oh, well, minimalist means simple. And it's kind of like, yeah, but, you know.
Right. That's mostly what I was getting at is, yeah, like, I think it's easy to look at it as a minimalist. Like, I think you could look at 808s if you're looking at purely on a surface level as a sort of regression, and the opposite of like everything he does on My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. But I would say those albums are actually very similar in their sound and the way they're maneuvering or with their music. I just think there's a beauty and art to that, that I can't quite speak to because I have no idea what I'm talking about with that stuff, but I can definitely feel it.
No. Yeah. You know, and My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. And again, this is why I love talking about Kanye, because Kanye is really like many artists in one, right? So for me, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy is, I imagine that's Kanye, the composer, you know? And I mean that not as in a general way of like music making. I mean that in a more specific way of what a composer does. So what a classical composer does is he writes the music for the instruments, then he gives it to a conductor, the conductor gives it to instrumentalists, and then the conductor, you know, runs the show while other instruments are playing the music together, but the conductor himself is the one who is imposing a single artistic vision on this entire thing, right? So what's interesting is that the performance of this work is so segmented. You know, the composer writes the music, but he doesn't fucking conduct it. The conductor conducts it, but he doesn't play it. He gives it to the instrumentalist. So My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy to me is Kanye the composer, because what Kanye did was he set absolutely no fucking limits to himself. And that's what a composer has, right? When a composer sits down, he's not worried about like, God damn, this shit might never get played. He's not like, God damn it, I don't have a 70-person orchestra in my backyard to play this music. He just brings forth his musical expressions and puts them in the pad and then kind of just lets the conductor worry about it. And so that's what Kanye did there. You know, it's like the maximalist Kanye. It's the 2010 Kanye, I would say, in all of its good and bad. Because he was just, he didn't put any fucking limits on it, you know? What did he call it? Dude, his quotes about all of the lights are some of the most Kanye-est quotes of all time, right up there with that fucking Twitter shit. He was just like, yeah, man, we're going to put Alicia Keys on it, then Kid Cudi, then Billy Joel, and it's going to be ghetto as fuck. I think that is the quote for Kanye's analysis of all the lights is ghetto as fuck. And God damn it if it isn't, dude, because he gives you brass. He gives you, like, a bridge, and then there's another bridge, and then we're back to the chorus. Dude, he brings in super mega stars for fucking, like, guest cameos that don't last more than, like, 10 seconds. Dude, I mean, because it took me a while to figure out that Elton John is the dude who sings at the end of that. And, yeah, and Alicia Keys is doing the shit in the middle. And, you know, and the Fergie. Music video. Yeah, exactly, yeah. And so Kanye is just, like, he kind of, like, sat back and he was like, you know what? What if I just didn't worry about shit? And he just fucking went for it. And so there's even another line on a different album where he acknowledges this, where he says something like, I gave you the album that you wanted. Now I'm going to do me, or something like that. Something on Yeezus, I think. And because he really did just do it as like the final word in the argument to me of whether or not Kanye knew what he was doing, right? Because you and me, you, all of us, we sit here and we analyze it, and all the time people are like, yeah, but Kanye never said that he did that on purpose. You know, Kanye doesn't know what he's doing. He's just getting lucky. But My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy is such a fucking edifice of musical architecture from front to back that, like, you just can't miss it. So to me, it was Kanye musically saying, like, yes, I know what I'm doing. Now leave me the fuck alone so I can make Yeezus. I think that's the best way to look at it. Because, yeah, you know, I've kind of left all, that part out a little bit, my beautiful dark. But, yeah, I mean, the All the Lights interlude. It's just so interesting to me how you can make an album with, what, 12 different songs? 13 if you count See Me Now. But just not... and not have like any obvious connections, right? There's not a there's not a concept to it, like as straightforward as Good Kid, Mad City, you know, 24 Hours in the Life of Kendrick Lamar, or something like that. But just goddamn me if it doesn't all feel like it's a single expression of just one musical idea. And that's what classical music is, you know. That's the difference between classical music and popular music, is that classical music will develop a single theme, and that's why you get fucking da 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 da. Dun 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 dun, or whatever, you know, because then Beethoven for the next 80 minutes, he'll play it. He'll play with that one single theme. But pop music goes a different direction. But Kanye just alludes to it so directly for me that it's like you can't fucking miss it. You can't.
That's one of the things that we talk about a lot. It's that Kanye works in such a subtle way. Like Kendrick on Good Kid, Mad City and To Pimp a Butterfly often telegraphs what he's doing in a way that gets him more, I think, credit for the artistry than necessarily what the level of technique in the narrative and storytelling necessarily deserves, which it's still, like, a great job, but it's, like, to put it into film parameters, it would be like, oh, I'm trying to think of what... Travis, do you have a movie in mind? That I started to say, like, a very like introspective like Fast and Furious, but that's underselling what Kendrick does.
Yeah, you know, maybe I'm kind of thinking of I don't know if I could dip my toe into the film critic pool. I mean, I fucking love Chris Nolan, you know, those Batman movies. I think the second Batman with the Joker is one of the greatest movies of all time, but it's just not, like you're saying, it's not subtle. You know, he makes direct reference to, in order to tie his narratives into the ongoing homegrown terrorist with those handycam videos of the Joker before he kills the guy, which, you know, is exactly like those fucking ISIS videos that come out now with Jihadi John and all that. But yeah, so I don't know if you want to think of Chris Nolan as Kendrick Lamar, then Kanye might be more someone like who's the guy who did The Master? Paul Thomas Anderson. Yeah, you know, and even that is a little too. I mean, but even, you know, I'm thinking of the Chris Nolan movie Memento, where it's played backwards. You see the movie backwards, which is super cool. But yeah, I don't know, you know, something with The Master, because it never quite sat right with me that people were like, oh, The Master is a critique of Scientology. I would be like, well, there are like 10 Scientologists, man. So why would he make a movie about that, you know? Or maybe even like a I don't know, man, like a Daniel Day-Lewis acting performance, like Lincoln. How the fuck can you make politics sexy? I don't know. So I'm reaching for something here. But yeah, I think that's a good point. But what amazes me, you know, I love that you brought up Kendrick, because Kendrick, the difference between Kanye and Kendrick is that Kendrick obviously doesn't create his beat backgrounds, right? That's the obvious thing. That's what fucking blows my mind. How does To Pimp a Butterfly sound like it was made by one producer, but the artist whose album it is doesn't even make his beats, man? You know, and I imagine that Kendrick is in the studio and he's like, how about you do this? How about you do this? But I haven't seen him with many production credits, and God, everyone gets fucking production credits nowadays, you know? And so when Damn comes off sounding as it does, and it's not like a fucking Game mega album, you know, whatever was after Documentary, where Game just called up all those fucking dudes, Boy Wonder, Dr. Dre, you know, but, and so you might like the songs, but you don't like the album because it all runs as a single flow to it, right? You know, and I think that's what Jay-Z was going more for when he decided to go back to No ID for all 10 tracks. So yeah, I do love that comparison though.
Mm. The Master is an interesting one too, because you mentioned people say it's about Scientology, but there really is something more going on with the idea of mastery of the self and humanity's nature towards greatness, towards, what's the word? Not idealization of the self, but that complete mastery of the self versus the animalistic.
Transcendence, maybe?
Yeah, that kind of transcendence of like what we think of as the soul versus the animal instincts. And we see this guy trying to be tempered into more of a human, but by the end of the movie, he just gives in to his animal instincts.
Yeah.
Which is really like triumphant in a way, even when it's also sad. But there's definitely more going on with Paul Thomas Anderson. And it's interesting that I think Kanye, by not addressing directly his techniques and the depths in his work, but having it there for anybody that recognizes the techniques to see and latch onto, it creates the impression that he wouldn't be going for the depth that he actually is going for and achieves.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, and I think, you know, something we do need to address here is kind of is Kanye's public quotes on the subject, right? Because I have to say, from what I've seen, when people ask Kanye to talk about his music, he does it really well in the general. But when it gets to, and again, you know, I've only seen, I'm thinking of two or three different parts, but when he gets to the specifics, then he kind of, to me, it almost seems like he jumps for buzzwords, right? So I saw something about, you know, and it's kind of like maybe he just got caught up in the rap culture. Obviously, he's a rapper. But so like when he does things, when he's like, New Slaves' second verse is the greatest rap verse of all time. Well, I can just say that's not true. And that is like objectively not true. You know, and so after Life of Pablo, I saw another tweet from him that was like, it's dealing exactly what we're talking about. But he said something like, incompleteness is now completeness. # contemporary art. And I'm just like, all right, dude, you like artistic critique is hard enough to do when you have 2-hour podcasts. But if you're going to try and do it in 140 words, I need something a little more that goes beyond like hashtags, right? Just because you're like, oh, well, it's contemporary art doesn't just mean I'm going to come across and be like, yeah, it's fucking awesome. You know, so it is fucking awesome. It just kind of seems to be that when you drag in these his public thoughts on the topic, there's almost like a disconnect or something there. So I would really be interested to know what he would think of all this. But yeah, I mean, because I see him and he talks about it really well in the general, and he does touch on these, but it's almost like he almost wants to stir the pot more than anything else. And that is where I think his goal of attaining greatness within his lifetime, because like you said, obviously he's going to do it after his life, it starts to become almost like a circular argument, right? Because he's mad that people won't accord to him this Pablo Picasso status. But people won't accord to him this Pablo Picasso status because he's mad that they haven't done it yet. So if he had just waited until, like, the Life of Pablo, dude, he would be in the fucking White House meeting with Obama for the Brothers Keeper program and not being called an ass by him instead of Kendrick Lamar, you know? So yeah, it is just all tangled up in these super interesting ones. But yeah, Ashley, you know what I did? How about the run, you know, because you guys have a foot in both worlds of rap narrative and then film narrative, what do you think of like Kanye's films then? I wonder if you've ever addressed this on a podcast, like Runaway. I'm thinking of Runaway, the 35-minute one that went with My Beautiful Dark. Yeah, that release.
Travis, this is your realm.
I have seen it many times. Well, just in the general sense, I mean, we could honestly do a 13-part series that is on just that movie, in my opinion. But
really?
In a general sense, I think it speaks to why I love Kanye, not necessarily as a musician, but more of an artist. Like, I get in arguments with people all the time who are like, people are saying like, he's just not a great rapper. Like, he just is not, if you compare him to somebody like Jay-Z. And I kind of get that. Like, I know early in his career, he was kind of made fun of and laughed at and told like, you can't be a rapper. Like, you understand that. Right.
Yeah. You want to be Snoop and Dr. Dre? Yeah. Don't nobody give a fuck what you got to say. I love that line. I love that line, man. Yeah, that's so good. Oh, no. You took the beats and passed them to myself. I'm Cordell Stewart. That is the kind of shit I'm talking about, man. That is why he used all those mixtape adjustment beats later on. But I'm sorry I cut you off.
No, it's OK. I love it. Any interruption that involves Kanye, like interrupt away.
We're good to go. OK, thank you. I got the green light on that one.
But I think it just speaks to him generally as an artist, and why he speaks to me is that it isn't about the rapping, it's about what the rapping is contained within. And that speaks to so much what I want out of films. I want
atmosphere and aesthetic, and I want this energy that that really is told. This, I want the story told visually, and I think Kanye really captures that. Like, he does it with his music, but with Runaway, the film, he's really able to put that album into context and everything Kanye's exploring, and all of the dark thoughts and the struggles he's going through are really depicted in this visual manner and this extreme maximalist, like Phoenix came down from the heavens tone that is just to me, like, so next level and so what I want out of movies and never gets, which really honestly, like, puts Runaway up there as one of my favorite movies ever, because I think, especially for a modern film, nobody really takes the chances that, like, they would back in the new Hollywood days. Like, there are no more Brian De Palmas or Stanley Kubricks or anybody like that. Kanye, to me, is the closest thing to that. So that's why I kind of covet that movie.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you see this in a lot of different art forms. You know, you need an outsider who doesn't know what he's, quote, unquote, supposed to do in order to fit in with people, right? So I think, like, Orson Welles, right, when he did Citizen Kane, he wasn't, like, a trained director who went to school. Or even, like, John Cage with composing, you know, the guy who did 433, the 4 minutes and 33 seconds of silence, right? All the time, people – yeah, like, all the time people are like, oh, man, classical music is just an intellectual masturbation. And I'm kind of like, dude, if you think that John Cage actually expected you to sit there – and, like, rock out to 4:33, well, you're kind of missing the point, man. And so, yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised if Kanye is, like, the same sort of situation. You get this outsider who doesn't know what he's, quote, unquote, supposed to do, and then he moves the art form forward. Yeah, I think you raised a lot of good points there.
Yeah. We see that with a lot of his music videos, which are much more collaborative than I think how he produces his albums and maybe works on the themes of his albums. But in all of his music videos, there's very interesting narrative techniques and cinematic techniques to the point where, like, his videos for The Life of Pablo are, like, insane, especially famous video. Like, the famous video is, and, you know, we've been to a lot of film festivals.
Yeah.
We've seen a lot of short films, independent films, all this stuff. If I saw the famous music video as a part of a short film before a movie, I would, like, applaud that. Knowing that it's part of Kanye at all, but just the ideas behind it, how it uses the horror movie, like the 60s horror movie voyeuristic perspective, and what that says about celebrity and what that says about us as the viewer of celebrity. It's insane.
Yeah, and that's what I love about the famous video is I think it is finally, like, the nail in the coffin of the argument that Kanye West doesn't do anything on his own. He's only enabled by his collaborators or whatever, right? Because it's based on a painting that a relatively unknown artist from New York did, right? And then Kanye turned it into a music video. And the only thing you need to know to learn that it is a great fucking music video is that, man, it made me feel bad for celebrities. You know, it made me feel for celebrities to be like, oh, man, that's sort of a lot. And no one had really done that besides, like, Eminem with, like, what do I think is success? It sucks. Too much stress. You know, because I think Eminem would love a fucking world where he could be paid for rap but not have to be known for it. Almost like Russ Westbrook with basketball, you know? and you don't get that from a lot of players, rappers, or producers like Kanye West. So that is a good point. Famous. Oh, the one I was thinking of was the Wolves one. You know, because I think there are, like, I guess I saw two, right? I saw one for the SNL one where they're crawling, which, I mean, dude, that stage, that setting.
It's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. That scenery is his fucking fashion come to life, right? You know, you see his fashion with, God, I don't have the words. I don't know, the palette of colors of all those people standing on when he rolled out Yeezus of I don't want to say drab, monotone. I don't know. God, saturation. What am I going for? Like browns and grays. I'm sorry. but like that, dude, that whole scenery, man, and that the roof is too low, so they all have to crawl. And dude, you know, I love that Vic Mensa version so much more now. And it just fit perfectly, you know, and that's what I love about it. So then, and then the Real Wolves one where all the people are standing around and Kim Kardashian is crying and it's black. And it's black and white. It's just, I don't know, you know. So I don't know too much about film to say something beyond it's good. but yeah, it really, so I would love to know more. Shit, gotta watch the podcast more, listen to the podcast more, I guess.
That's one of the things that we're angling for. Once we kind of run out of songs, which we'll sadly one day do, is like,
yeah, I doubt it, man. I doubt it. Because that's what I love about Kanye, you know, because I grew up more on Dr. Dre, and Dr. Dre's thing was like, just make each album a hit. You know, so he did what? This NWA albums, 1986 was Straight Outta Compton. Maybe, no, it's always later than that thing. Maybe 88. And then what? Chronic in 1992, Doggy Style in 93, 2001 in 1999, and then Compton in 2016. But, so, but then, dude, Kanye released three fucking albums in 1 year, right? He did the Good Music, Cruel Summer, and then he did Watch the Throne, and then what went with that? My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. So, you say you will run out of songs, but really, dude, Kanye might just have too much to say, man. I really, you know.
I hope so.
Yeah. For all I know, the album will fucking come out tomorrow. For all we know, right? Because that's how people goddamn do it. And then, unless it's Future, and then you're releasing two albums tomorrow. So yeah, it's hard to keep up nowadays.
It is indeed. Well, I want to ask. Do you have any final thoughts before we kind of wrap up the show? Anything else that you want to kind of discuss, talk about?
Oh God, I don't know, man. Unless you want to make this like the start of a second version of the show. I really don't think so, because yeah, we touched on, I don't know, man. We got to Borge. So you know what? I'm calling that a good day, man.
All right. Perfect. Well, we'll have you on again soon, and we'll find another topic to start with and then greatly deviate from. And it will be awesome.
And then yeah.
Thanks so much
for coming
on.
Shit on Wyoming some more. but no, yeah, this was really great. I honestly can't thank you guys enough so much for having me on. I really admire what you do with the podcast, because it's not an easy format to work within. I know from personal experience. But yeah, this has been awesome. Thanks so much for having me on, and I hope we can do it again.
Absolutely. Well, do we have a sign off, Travis?
Keep it wavy, baby.
Keep it wavy. Heard.
Wavy, baby. Yeah.
Audible.com. Go to audibletrial.com/WTT to get a free audiobook and a 30-day trial with Audible. If you do, we'll love you as much as Kanye loves Kanye.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.